And you're with Bruce Argyle on Community Conversations here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1. And my very special guest via Zoom, all the way from Buxton, Megan Buntine. Hi, Megan. How are you this morning?
Hi, Bruce. So good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Is it a little bit cooler up there?
It's currently raining fairly solidly.
Okay. And, of course, you've just returned from South Australia. Is it cooler or warmer back here?
I think it's cooler here. It was cool there, but it's cooler here still. We're at single-digit maximum, so that's a bit of a challenge after you've been away for a
lot. Okay. Yeah, so Megan, we're just having a slight technical challenge here, so we're going to go to your first song and then we'll just sort that out. It's the Rolling Stones, Jumping Jack Flash. I think that's one of your favourites, Megan.
Yeah, always like a bit of Stones.
There we go. Let's have a listen. Wasn't that a bit of a storm this week? I hope you haven't had too much damage at your place, wherever you are. And, well, maybe like many other people, you might have been watching a little bit of the Commonwealth Games over the last few days. Amazing athletes there. And, well, a big shout-out to Maggie Somerville, who was our guest here just 2 weeks ago on Community Conversations. And her daughter, and I had a look last night, her daughter is the Australian badminton champion. And her name is Gronnie Sullivan. And, they won the doubles, I had a look, against Sri Lanka. So well done. Amazing badminton. We don't hear some of these other sports so much, but Maggie, you'll be very proud. And, of course, last week we had the Recovery Committee panel. And if you haven't heard about the Recovery Committee, there are grants available for community groups at the moment to reconnect, to get back on your feet and to source some much-needed funding, up to $5,000, closing on the 1st of September. All the details are on the Yarra Rangers Council website. You can find out about them there. But this morning, because it is that time of the year again, what is that time of the year again? Well, it's that time of the year when community organisations, not-for-profit organisations, start thinking about annual general meetings or AGMs, another great meeting or something. Megan, I can't think of anyone who knows more about AGMs or has probably been to more AGMs than what you have. I was doing a little bit of research. Sorry, Megan, before I let you answer, I was doing a little bit of research on AGMs and incorporated associations, and I'm just wondering how many incorporated associations there must be in Victoria.
There's nearly 40,000. So that's a lot of AGMs. Not all of them are necessarily having their AGMs coming up, but most run on the financial year, not the calendar year, so most will be having them coming up. I think another great meeting, I've never heard that as an acronym for AGM before. I'll have to use that.
Very good. Megan, we're going to spend, a little bit of time this morning, hopefully giving some useful, some very relevant information around AGMs for community groups, for not-for-profit organisations who are, whether they like it or not, needing to have an AGM in the next 5 months. Isn't that about right?
Yeah, that's right. And look, I think most people would rather stick pins in their eyes and go to another jolly meeting. But I think if we can find a way to make them as palatable as possible, because they are effectively the most important meeting of our association throughout the year, where we report back to our members what we've been doing as a committee or a board. We report around the finances and the good news stories. And I think if we could find a way to keep the businessy side of things as brief as possible and have fun. Oftentimes it involves our elections for the year as well, so it's a really important time of year.
Mm. Now, let's go back to 101. Incorporated associations, incorporated with Corporate Affairs Victoria, are required, mandated, legally have to have an AGM, don't they, Megan?
Yeah, they do. So it's part of the association's Incorporation Reform Act requirements. So when you become an incorporated association, which most of our not-for-profits in Victoria are, you have to comply with that piece of legislation. And one of the things in that legislation is that you must have an AGM to report back to your members, or if you're not a member-based organisation, just generally to report back to the community good practice. So making sure you do that in a way that is consistent with the legislation is really important. And I think that oftentimes we sort of roll our eyes and the shutters come up when we think about processes and steps that we have to go through. But there is a really great resource that you've probably heard me carry on about a lot in the past. It used to be called the Secretary Satchel. It's put out by Justice Connect's not-for-profit law branch. They recently did a revamp and an update at the end of last year, and it's now called the Guide to Running an Incorporated Association in Victoria. So I think perhaps why they changed the name is because when it's called the Secretary Satchel, the rest of us sitting on boards of committee go, well, that's the Secretary's responsibility, not the rest of us. So it's really focusing on the fact that, no, the Secretary might be the person who is sort of the conduit between our association and Consumer Affairs Victoria, but it's not all their job. It's our job to make sure that it happens for the organisation across the board.
Mm. And Megan, would it be going too far to say that if you do nothing as a result of this program this morning, you should order a copy of that document, Running an Incorporated Association of Victoria, put out by Justice Connect, May 2022. I was looking through it this morning, Megan, over breakfast, and wow, what an amazing resource.
It is a fantastic resource. I've often said, you know, particularly when I was talking about it in its previous name, the Secretary Satchel, that it's my Bible for not-for-profits, and it is, because it's It's broken down into about 8 different sections, one of which is all about AGM, but it looks at some of the key, well, the key responsibilities for an incorporated association in Victoria. So if you follow the requirements of that that new guide, you can be assured that you're being consistent with the legislation under which your organisation is incorporated. So I can't recommend it enough to people. You just simply need to get online and download a copy. That's as easy as it is to get it.
And no cost, Megan?
No, absolutely free. And it's a fabulous resource. It's very comprehensive. It's got lots and lots of great information, lots of tools and templates and different tips, and also links to external further resources, websites, all sorts of things. So, yeah, can't recommend it highly enough.
Terrific. Listeners, we're going to come back and look at what are the hallmarks, what are the key ingredients of a good AGM. And Megan, we haven't talked about this, but I've listed 5 of them on my page here, and we'll come back and see if my 5 compare with your 5 or more, and let's see if we can get it right.
Sorry, kids, we got no reply. For me, then I'll say goodbye.
And you're with Bruce Argyle, and we're talking preparing and running successful AGMs that time of the year again. And my very special guest via Zoom is Megan Buntine, who's been to more AGMs than anyone else I know, and is a wonderful resource. And Megan, I was saying just before the last song that I'd written down five things that might be the hallmarks of a great AGM. Let's see if you concur with my little list. But the first one I've got here is that it's a time to celebrate achievements and to, you know, put a stake in the ground and say, you know, we've done this and we've done that. Is that a good first purpose?
I think that's a really great place to start, because I think we don't do enough of that, celebrating the great work that we do. I think we're often so busy trying to get ahead and troubleshoot and make things work that we forget to sit back and actually look and celebrate what we have achieved and recognise that we've actually achieved quite a lot. So I think your AGM is a really good touch point to do that throughout the year. And, you know, it's sort of part of what your AGM's about, isn't it? It's about reporting back to your members or reporting back to your community. So, you know, perfect opportunity to do that.
Mm. The second one I've got on my list, Megan, is very closely related to that, and that is to acknowledge the contributions, the input, the work that volunteers mostly have done during the past year.
Yeah, I think that's another really important thing to think about. And, you know, you can do that at Christmas time too, but I think the more you find opportunities to thank the people who make the wheels of your organisation turn, particularly that, as you say, so many of us run on unpaid support, and, you know, it's wonderful that people feel that care enough about the community, I guess, to do that. For us. So we need to find ways of recognising that and giving them some reward and recognition, so that your AGM, I think, is a great opportunity to do that, whether you do that through sort of a formal recognition process, you know, years of service certificates, whatever the case may be, or, you know, just giving everybody a little bit of a present to say thanks. I think it's a great opportunity to do that too. And, you know, getting that sort of vibe about your AGM, making it a celebration and a thank you, that's going to encourage people to come along as well. So oftentimes people struggle with getting people along to AGMs, particularly to meet the quorum requirements of the number of people you need to have there. So I think the more fun you can make it, the more likely people are going to be to come along and participate.
Mm. Megan, the third one I have on my list, and we will go back to that word quorum in a minute, is that we do have some legal obligations that have to be met, the reason for having an AGM. Just tick those off for us, Megan. What are the minimum, shall we say, or the legal requirements for an AGM?
So you need to pass your annual finances past your members, so you need to give them the financial reports for the previous financial year. That's why we do it after the end of the financial year, to make sure that you're doing everything above board and you're being open and transparent and accountable for what you're doing with the organisation's finances. So that's just one of the ways that we do that. Obviously, after the AGM, we then need to send that through to Consumer Affairs, or if you're a registered charity, send it through to the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profit Commission. But we need to firstly report on our finances to our members, and secondly, report on our finances to our government regulators.
Mm. There's also in many cases, the setting of membership fees, Megan, the appointment of auditors and things like that.
Yep, those are important elements too. So the things that you're required to cover off at your AGM, those sorts of legal things, they're covered in the secretary satchel, but no, the guide to running a corporate actors association. Consumer Affairs on their website have lots of great tip sheets and fact sheets as well that can help you tick off those requirements. Your rules of association covers those things as well. So, you know, there's a number of resources that you can go to sort of get that list of, okay, what are the things that we need to cover off on? So as you said, you know, setting your membership fee, if there is one, oftentimes your election will happen at your AGM as well. So electing your committee or your board, it might be that for some organisations that's everyone. So everyone stands down and all positions are re-elected. For other organisations, it might be that, you know, half go at each election, or even a third go at each election. It just comes down to what it says in your rules. So I know, again, I harp on about the rules or the constitution, as some organisations may refer to it as, but that really is your guiding document that tells you how your organisation is set up and how you need to act in order to comply with the requirements.
While we're on the legal bit, Megan, what about, you've already mentioned quorum, but what about notice and letting members know of the AGM? Or where do we stand with all that?
Yeah, so generally you have to give people 14 days, at least 14 days notice of an AGM. So think about, I would actually make it a little bit longer than that to account for things like, you know, the day that you put the notice out and the day of the AGM. So I'd sort of not count them in my 14 days. These days, generally, we're not relying on the post. We're often we're doing it electronically, so it's pretty quick, so you don't really need to take the post into account necessarily. The other thing to think about too is if you have a special resolution that's going to be voted on at your AGM, so there's, you know, really important decisions, things like changing your organisation's name, I'm just going blank. I thought the other special resolutions are. Yeah. But anyway, there's a bunch of special resolutions that are listed in the guide. So it's key things about your organisation. Winding up is another one. Amalgamation is another one. So any of those key sort of really, really important decisions that you make that you have to take to the membership to vote on, if there's going to be a special resolution, you need to actually give 21 days notice, not just 14. So if you've got an important decision like that that you're going to make, first, be mindful of the fact that you need to have it out, the notice of the AGM out, and the notice of what the special resolution is. What is that question that you're going to ask people to vote on? That all needs to go out at least 21 days in advance. Mm.
And before we go to our next song, Megan, the word quorum, a really unusual word, really, but what are we saying with a quorum?
So quorum is just ensuring that we have enough people there to make a decision on behalf of the organisation. So, for example, we don't want just a few people from the organisation making significant decisions. So generally, and again, you need to go back to your organisation's individual set of rules to find out what the quorums are stipulated in your rules. But generally, it's at an AGM, it's 10% of your members. At your committee or board meetings, it could be the majority of the committee or board people. So, for example, if you've got a committee or board of nine, you want to have at least five people in the room to make your committee or board meeting legitimate. And similarly for your AGM, say you've got 100 members on the books, you need to have at least 10 of them, or I'd say 11 of them in the room, to be able to make that a legitimate meeting. And if you don't get a quorum, then you can't legally go ahead with those key things like, voting on special resolutions, accepting the finances for the year, voting on who the auditor would be or what your membership fees will be going forward. So in actual fact, if you don't get a quorum within half an hour, you need to postpone your meeting.
Okay, we'll talk more about that. But let's have another one of your song selections here, Megan. We've got Queen and We Will Rock You.
A big noise playing in the street, gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace, kicking your can all over the place, singing, we will rock you. We will rock you. Buddy, you're a young man, hard man, shouting in the street, gonna take on the world someday. You got blood on your face, a big disgrace, waving your banner all over the place. We will rock you. Sing it. We will rock you. Buddy, you're an old man, poor man, pleading with your eyes, gonna make you zombie someday. You got mud on your face, big disgrace, somebody better put your bag into your place. We will rock you. Everybody, we will rock you.
currently 16 degrees. Wow, it is 16 degrees already today, heading for a maximum of 17. So we're nearly there. Cloudy today and then rain tomorrow, showers on the weekend by the looks of it. So we're talking this morning with my very special guest here from Buxton, Megan Buntine. And Megan, as I pick up my headphones that I just dropped, we're talking AGMs. We're talking annual general meetings, preparing, planning for a successful AGM, running one. Perhaps you're a group, maybe you're in a role that you haven't actually been involved in an AGM before. So there's certainly some legal requirements, Megan, but it's more important than that, isn't it? It's an opportunity. It's really an opportunity for an organisation, if they get it right, to do a whole lot of things.
Yeah, and look, I think my aim at an AGM, if I'm running an AGM, is always to let's keep the legal stuff or the official stuff as brief as possible. It's always like a competition to see how short I can get it. Could we get it over and done within 15 minutes? And then let's get on to the fun stuff. I think, you know, having a great speaker is another way to get people to come along and get them inspired. So, you know, celebration, recognition, good speaker, and let's make the business side of things as brief as possible. So, you know, take the reports as read. I've been to some AGMs where people will sit down and read, you know, word for word, the reports out of the annual report.
Yes, ouch, I have two. I have two, Megan. Ouch, ouch.
Yeah, so let's just say, okay, we'll take them as read and accept those. You know, I think it's important for the treasurer to give a bit of a verbal report, but a summary, you know, a spoken summary to what's in the annual report. So highlighting the good things and, you know, any challenges that may be there.
Yes, and normally that means that the reports have been sent out a couple of weeks before the meeting at least, Megan, so people have got that opportunity to have a look at them?
Yeah, look, I think if you've got your annual report available, get it out to people perhaps in advance so that they can do that, but certainly have copies of them available invite people to come along for an afternoon tea beforehand and have copies of the annual report sitting there so they can browse through those during the afternoon tea. Then when you hit the meeting, you hit the ground running and you can get on with it and get through it as quickly as possible.
Mm. So you've made a great suggestion there around a interesting guest speaker, which is terrific. So just to recap, we've talked about celebrating achievements, we've talked about acknowledging contributions, we've talked about meeting the legal obligations. The fourth one on my list of five, Megan, I had was to inform members, so that people are up to speed with perhaps some of the challenges, some of the directions, some of the thoughts, just to keep members informed on what's happening with their association.
Yeah, absolutely. At the end of the day, it comes back to that accountability and transparency that I mentioned before, doesn't it? It's about recognising that as a committee or as a board, we're running the organisation on behalf of our members or our community. So we're it's not all about us. It's about the people who we serve. So how do we report back to them? How do we inform them about what we're doing on their behalf, what we're doing with, you know, the money that we have as an organisation, which is there to provide benefits to them in some way, shape or form? So I think it's really important that we have some sort of, whether it's a showcase of a good news story or whatever way you choose to do it, but I think it is important that we're engaging with the people who we're there, who our purpose is to help or to provide a service to, and we're reporting back to them about how we're doing that.
Mm. Nothing worse than having any organisation where the members don't feel they know what's actually happening on the ground, or, you know, even good and bad, Megan.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's really important. And, you know, at the end of the day, often you're paying a membership fee to the organisation that you're a part of. So, you know, well, what are we doing with that money? Where is that going? How's that helping our organisation? And what other things are we doing to deliver on the purpose for which our organisation exists?
Mm. The fifth one and the final one I had on my list, Megan, I'm probably hijacking your list, but let me finish my one first, is that it's also about setting directions, looking forward, isn't it? Isn't it about challenging members as well?
Yeah, look, I think it is. And I think part of that too, and this is one thing that we haven't really touched on much yet, but about the election of the new committee or the new board.
Yes, let's do that next. Let's do that.
Yeah, So it's about how do we get people involved? How do we inspire people around what is our vision as an organisation? You know, what is our strategy to achieve that vision and deliver on our purpose? So trying to inspire people and get them excited about what we're doing and get them to get involved, perhaps a bit more involved, maybe get them to step up and join the committee or the board. I mean, you would have done a lot of work prior to your AGM to get people engaged in that way, and I'll talk a bit more about that in a minute. But I think, yeah, to really show the direction, show how we're achieving the things that are important to us.
Let's have another song. That was a short one, last one. Let's have another song and we'll come back and talk about, Megan, how do we overcome that challenge of not being able to find a secretary, not being able to get a president, succession planning, and just how do we do that? That's one of the hardest things, isn't it?
I think it often is, isn't it?
Yes. Let's have a listen and we'll come right back.
Listening to Buck Owens, do, 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 looking out my back door. Tambourines and elephants are playing in the band. Won't you take a ride on the flying spoon? Do, 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 one less apparition provided by magician. Do, 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 looking out my back door.
FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
And after 11 o'clock this morning, we have Art Journal, which, Cora tells me she's going to be speaking with Sonia Lieber and David Chesworth, where they are having a special exhibition at the Tarawarra Museum of Art, which runs from the 30th of July to the 13th of November. So we've got a few weeks to get there. Make sure you don't miss it, though. And the theme of the exhibition is Where Lakes Once Had Water. Sounds fascinating, Cora. And I've just made a mental note. I've got to get there myself. But if you want to hear all about it, well, why don't you just tune in after 11 o'clock this morning, and Cora will have Sonia and David, yes, on the program, and we'll know all the questions and all the answers, Cora, or something like that. But for this morning, my very special guest via Zoom, and I haven't actually given contact details, so I'll do that now, is Megan Buntine. Megan is a wonderful resource to community groups, not-for-profit organisations. You can have a look at her, many free resources on her website, which is www.mjbconsulting.net.au, or you can send Megan an email, Megan at mjbconsulting.net.au. And Megan, we've even got a not-for-profit lunch today. We're going to be talking about some of this, some of these similar things, aren't we, today?
Yes, we are. So our topic for this quarter is succession planning and board development. So I think that's a really good segue into what we just talked about before, the music around succession planning and the importance of doing that early.
Let's start from the worst possible case scenario, and then we'll go to the best. So the worst, Megan, seems to me, and you and I have both seen it, where someone on the floor of the meeting has their arm twisted or something or other, or they've gone outside to the bathroom, and they come back inside, and they've been elected president or secretary or something. Have you seen those sorts of disasters?
Yeah, that's right. You know, there's a flurry of papers at the meeting. You know, quick sign up, you know, here's your nomination form. Please come and join the board or the committee. I think that's really not a great way to do it, because you're not being proactive. You're not necessarily getting people who've got the skills that you're seeking. So I always say to organisations, you know, start at least 3 months out from your AGM to do the work to get the right people on the board or on the committee of management. And, you know, if you've got key people who are stepping down, like your president or your secretary or your treasurer, for example, I would say start even earlier than that, maybe, you know, 6 months out, really start to, not that you're doing the actual work of going out and getting people, but start thinking about, okay, well, what skills are we going to be missing now? What skills do we need to bring in? Who do we know within our networks who might potentially have those skills? If we don't know anyone, where could we go to find someone? Do that sort of pre-planning stuff as far out as you can. And, you know, it's funny, I said that at a training session one day, and one of the people in the room stopped me and he said, "No, you're wrong." And I said, "Oh, okay, tell me about that." He said, "You need to start succession planning the day after your AGM." So, you know, suggesting that we need to be doing it 12 months in advance.
We just lost your sound there, Megan. I'm not sure why. Let's just, let me just talk over you just for a moment. Just to say that those roles, president, secretary, treasurer, committee members, are critically important for organisations, because that committee, in effect, comes to represent the members between AGMs to make sure that the business of the organisation follows, well, the statement of purposes, which is part of the rules of association for the entity. And that committee then needs to be reflecting the membership, and it needs to be, well, committed to carrying out what the members want. Does that sound, and we have lost Megan there, so have we got you back there, Megan?
I can hear you now.
There we go.
Back.
Yeah, we're not sure.
Sorry about that. You're
I think
sure.
There was a little weather glitch or something or other.
Just computer glitch.
Yeah, something like that. Megan, that's true, isn't it? That committee has to be, well, entrusted really with the oversight, the good governance of the association between AGMs.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's about constantly having your eye on the ball, thinking about, okay, well, who's indicating that they're going to step down at the next election? What are the skills that they have that we're going to effectively lose if they step down? Who could potentially come in and have those skills and replace those? So, you know, I've actually got a succession planning program that I run for organisations that's, you know, really quite comprehensive when we go through that process. You know, we look at what do the rules say about elections and committee or board positions, how often do they need to be changed over, what's the skills matrix for the committee look like, what skills do we need to bring in, and what are we going to lose along the way, and then being really proactive about, like, how do we go out and find those people who are going to add value and fill those gaps.
Megan, it does seem that given the COVID lockdowns, the isolations, the changes that have been brought upon, well, all of us and our communities over the last couple of years, that perhaps getting people to volunteer to be a part of a committee, to be part of a board, is just that little bit harder than perhaps it was 3 years ago. Would that be a fair comment?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, we're all exhausted, aren't we? And I think that can be a challenge. But also, you know, everyone's feeling a little bit isolated. You know, people's mental health is not necessarily as good as it was 3 years ago. So perhaps we can look at the positives that come out of getting involved and being around other people, you know, meeting new people, connecting with people, and I guess the positive health benefits that come out of that and the social connection that comes out of that. And the other thing that I'm noticing, you know, it's really interesting. I think historically it's been sort of people who are perhaps nearing retirement age or already retired who've got the time and the capacity to do this sort of volunteer work. I'm actually seeing a shift in that. I'm seeing younger people wanting to get involved now. I think people see it as, particularly if there's challenges in the job market, they see volunteering as a way of building some job-ready skills.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if they're volunteering for an organisation that they perhaps might like to work with down the track, it could be a foot in the door. For some people, it's about building their CV so that they've got more skills and more experience to look more attractive to other employees. So, yeah, there's an interesting shift there that I'm just noticing.
And Megan, you've just highlighted something else that's really important, I think, and that is what about, you know, professional development or skills development for people coming onto committees, you know, people who feel, well, actually, I don't think I could do that, or, you know, I haven't got the skills or I haven't got the confidence. Like, where can people go to get that sort of help?
Yeah, look, I think the first responsibility for that lies with the organisation that they're coming to volunteer with. We need to have a good orientation and induction program for people who are joining us so that they understand who we are, what we're about. They may not necessarily be someone who's come out of our membership body, so they could be, you know, quite new to what we do. So we need to make sure we bring them in, we orientate them well so they feel that they, A, that they're part of the organisation, and B, that they've got a good, solid understanding of who we are, what we do, you know, the let's call it the environment, for want of a better word, that we work in, you know, the sector that we work in, who are the other players and stakeholders, give them a good grounding in that sort of stuff. And then obviously, as you say, along the way, professional development, whether, I mean, obviously I bang on that good governance training for committees and boards all the time, and I think that's really important. So, you know, it might be that some organisations don't necessarily have the funds to do that, so how can they find those funds, either through a grant to be able to do it internally, or, you know, maybe through a sponsorship where, you know, for example, Bendigo Bank has sponsored the work that I've done over time, where I've been able to offer places in my training sessions to people who sit on not-for-profit committees and boards free of charge. So, you know, get out there, be on the ground, find the information so that you can bring. There's plenty of free training out there, whether it's through Justice Connection, their not-for-profit law branch, or even if it's just, you know, having resources like this guide to running an incorporated association, like the fact sheets that you'll find on the Consumer Affairs website or the not-for-profit law website. So there's plenty of resources out there that we can use to keep our people, you know, skilled up and trained up to be able to do their role effectively.
Before we move on to the next area, Megan, what about longevity? What about, you know, in terms of, we've talked about trying to recruit people, select people, the right people to go on committees. What about how long do we stay, and can we possibly stay too long?
I think that's something that's really good to think about, because I've certainly noticed in the past a lot of organisations have had an open-ended tenure for their committee or board members. And, you know, I've seen situations where, you know, somebody's been the secretary of the local tourism association for the last 25 years, desperately wants to step down, but they don't feel that there's anyone that they can hand over to. So, you know, that's not an ideal situation for the individual or the organisation. So I think if we can start to build, you know, some tenure into our rules of association. So, you know, maybe it's that we have 2-year terms and we can serve 4 of those. So we have an 8-year maximum, perhaps. A, it means that people don't feel like they're there for life.
Yeah.
And B, it sets the expectation that the organisation needs to be thinking about, well, who's going to take over that from that person. And, you know, it might be that you've got an assistant secretary on your committee of management who is effectively being trained up and mentored alongside of that longer-term secretary, so that when they step down, that assistant secretary can take over and it's a much smoother transition.
Fantastic. Megan, we're going to come back and just tie it all together before we wrap up before the 10 o'clock news. But And we'll also give you again the link to that amazing resource that you really must have. So let's have a listen to Deep Purple. We've really only scratched the surface this morning talking about preparing and running a successful AGM. If you missed the program, well, listen to the podcast or go to Megan Buntine's wonderful website, www.mjbconsulting.net.au, or send Megan an email, megan@mjbconsulting.net.au. Megan, an AGM, it's about celebrating achievements, acknowledging contributions, informing members, setting directions and meeting legal obligations. And there's a wonderful resource that goes into a whole lot more detail, which we must give listeners one more time.
Yeah, so the Guide to Running Incorporated Association in Victoria is put out by Justice Connect's not-for-profit law branch. It's just a fabulous resource. Used to be called the Secretary's Satchel, but I'm glad they've changed the name because it takes the pressure off the Secretary. It's not all their job. It's all of us have to make sure that these important things happen. So, yeah, it's just a fantastic resource. It's my Bible for a not-for-profit. Incorporated associations in Victoria.
Megan, I'm going to finish with your inspiring thought, and that is think about a guest speaker for your AGM. Just 30 seconds on that. Why and who?
Look, I think if you've got a great guest speaker, it brings people out of the woodwork because they want to come along and hear them. So, you know, you get people there, and while they're there, you can do the businessy side of things, keep it brief, but that ensures you get the number of people that you need to get your quorum to be able to do the things legally that you need to do. So think about, you know, what's topical for your organisation, or, you know, what's inspiring for your organisation, and get somebody along to talk about that.
Wow. And there you have it, listeners. That's another Community Conversations program. Thank you for your company this morning. Megan, thank you so much for your amazing input again. That's really, really helpful.
You're welcome.
And listeners, we'll be back same time next week with another amazing program. We're going to go out with the Springfields.